All right, we're going to talk about one of those four-letter words this morning. Every time you hear a four-letter word, it usually implies something bad. And for a lot of us, this is something bad. We're going to talk about the word O-B-E-Y, to obey. Okay? Now, we, as a human race, we're a bunch of mavericks when it comes to obeying. Okay? Because all of us tend to rationalize what we want to obey and not obey. It comes from the time when we're little bitty children, when mama says, go take a nap. What did the little kid do? I don't want to, we rebel. Okay. When we get in our cars, we're driving down the road and the speed limit says 50 miles an hour and we're driving 60 miles an hour. What are we doing? Well, that's not right. I know I can drive 60 miles an hour safely. Okay. So we're rebelling against that. And it comes all the way down to, our response to the biblical commands that God gives to us. Okay. So we tend to pick and choose what we want to obey and what we don't want to obey. Okay, real quickly, someone read for me John chapter 6 and verse 46. And then someone else grab James chapter 1 verse 22. Luke chapter 6 verse 46. Luke. Yeah, what did I say? John. It's Luke. It's the first time I've ever done that, isn't it? What are y'all laughing at? Luke 6 verse 46. Okay. And then James 1 and 22. Okay. Okay, so that's Jesus' response. I think he's talking mainly to the Pharisees at that time. He said, why are you calling me Lord and you don't do the things that I'm telling you to do? Okay, all right, James chapter 1, verse 22. What does he say over there? Someone have it? 1 and 22. Okay, be doers of the word and not hearers only, okay? Now, we sometimes consider ourselves being obedient when we hear the word and we know the word, but we're not obedient until we do what? You do it, okay? So it's not enough just to know the commandments. You have to do the commandments in order to be obedient. Okay, let's take a look at two Old Testament examples. Go over to 1 Samuel chapter 15. We're going to read over there. We're not going to read it. We'll talk about it. We'll read a couple of verses there. But this is a story about King Saul. Okay? And King Saul was sent to totally annihilate the nation of the Amalekites. Okay? He was told to go in there and kill them, man, woman, child, infant, nursing babies, kill all the livestock. In other words, just wipe them off the face of the earth. Okay? Now, let's go back and remember that when Abraham came out of Ur of the Chaldees and he came to there at the Promised Land, and God told Abraham that he was going to give him as an inheritance that land, but he would never possess it. Okay? He said the reason why he's not going to possess it is because those inhabitants of that land, the term he used was their iniquity has not been fulfilled. Okay, so in other words, this was an evil people, but God was going to give them time to repent. Okay, now he sent the nation of Israel down into Egypt, and how long did they spend down there? 45, 50 years, something like that. And then they came out and roamed around in the wilderness for about 40 years. So about 500 years after they went into captivity, now they're occupying the Promised Land, and what God was trying to do, he was going to drive out all those evil, adulterous people that he had given 500 years to repent, and they haven't done it. And so he's saying basically the time is up. My people, the Israelites, are going to go in there and occupy that land, and I don't want them rubbing shoulders with any of these evil people, okay, because we're going to annihilate this people. And so this seems kind of cruel on God's half, but he says wipe them out totally. Just, you know, burn their possessions. Don't want no more evidence of the those people from Amalek. Okay, so let's look at verse three of chapter 15, and let's look at the command that God gives to King Saul there. Someone read that for me. Verse 3.
Now go and attack Amalek
That's total annihilation, isn't it? He's going to extinguish the nation of Amalek. Okay? Now, that seems kind of cruel on God's behalf, but he's doing it for a reason. They have not repented. Okay? And we know that God's not going to allow those things to exist forever. So the instructions to King Saul is now go in there and wipe them out. Get rid of them, because I don't want you rubbing elbows with them when you get into the promised land. Okay? Or when they take over there. Okay? All right. Let's go down to verse 9. And let's see how Saul responded to that. Okay, someone read for me verse 9.
But Saul and the people spared Amalek, and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, and
of the fattens, and of the lambs, all that was good, and would not utter the Lord. Okay, so how did Saul respond to the command? What did he do? Okay, now, he probably carried out 95% of what God told him to do, right? Because he wiped out all those people except for King Agag, all right? Okay, and those animals, okay? So, ask yourself a question. Did Saul obey God's command? We might say, well, 95%, well, no. There's no 95%. You either did what he said or you didn't do. And just because he did part of it doesn't mean he did all of it, okay? All right, so as a result of that, drop down to about verse 17, and we're going to see Samuel's response to Saul and his failure to carry out those commands. So someone read for me verse 17 through 19. Anybody? Somebody read? Doesn't matter who, somebody read. Okay, so Samuel went and he heard those animals, okay, and God said, go confront Saul, and he went and told him, said, Saul, you know, you were just a nobody when God chose you, and he raised you up and made you king over Israel, and he said, up until this point, you've done good, okay, but why did you then not carry out God's command, all right? Well, read verse 20 and 21. I want to see Saul's response to what Samuel has just told him. So someone read those two verses, 20 and 21.
And Saul said to Samuel, but I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission of which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the plunder, sheep and oxen, the best of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice to the Lord, your God.
All right. What was Saul's response? I did what he told me to do.
You know,
yeah, I went in there and destroyed, yeah, but the people, okay, so Saul claims to have carried out what he said, but he said the people wanted to do this, okay, and so they brought these things back, so now he's trying to pass the buck, okay.
Well, on top of that, it makes it sound like they're going to sacrifice these animals.
Well, yeah, and that's a good thing, right? We brought these back for a sacrifice, to worship God, okay. Now, I want you to look at Samuel's response to that, verse 22 and 23. Someone read those verses for me.
So Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord,
okay, so here's the important thing of what Samuel said. To obey is better than sacrifice. Okay, all right. Here's the thing we need to keep in mind. Our sacrifices to God, okay, are no good unless we're obedient to God. Okay, in other words, they're of no use to us whatsoever unless we're obedient to God. Okay. That's something we need to keep in mind for our lives today. We might go through all the motions. We might do all the things, you know, that outwardly God tells us to do. We could give of our money and we could be here, you know, at church attendance and we could pray, okay? But if we're not obeying what God tells us to do, those things are of no avail. We're just disobedient, rebellious people. That's what Samuel calls him here, was it not? You know, he says it's as much as a divination and idolatry what you're doing. That's a bad, sad accusation, isn't it? Okay, so we learn from this that obedience comes first. Okay, obedience is first. All right, now let's go over to Daniel chapter 1. I want to make a comparison over there to some fellows over in Daniel chapter 1. This is where the children of Israel were carried off into a Babylonian captivity. This was in like 606 B.C., somewhere along in there. Flipping through Daniel chapter 1. There we go. Found it. I knew it was in there somewhere. All right. So what's going to happen here in Daniel chapter 1? They're going to be carried over into Babylonian captivity. And we want to talk about these three guys, Daniel being one of them, and then his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Okay? So they're chosen to be primed to take a place in the Babylonian government. Okay? So they're going to take these three guys because they were handsome, well-figured, educated men, and they're going to train them and teach them the Babylonian ways so that they could become a part of their life. So there's three things that they're given to do. You can kind of read along there as you see these things, but this is where the story is. One thing that we're going to see that happens is that they're going to be given some choice food. In other words, they're going to be fed from what they call the king's table. They were going to eat what the king ate. And part of that food that they were supposed to eat was unclean food, according to the Jews. And by the way, they weren't called Jews at this time. They're not called Jews until later. They're Hebrews or Israelites at this time. So, but the things that Israelite and the Hebrew people could eat was determined by God. He said, don't eat these things, okay? You can read over in Deuteronomy and Leviticus about those things that they could and could not eat. But basically, those things were served on the king's table, and they were expected to eat it. Okay? So that's one thing that they're confronted with. Another thing that we're going to see happen in the book of Daniel is that Nebuchadnezzar is going to build this giant statue. Remember that story about the giant statue? And he said, basically what you're going to hear when you hear the instruments playing and the flutes and the trumpets blowing, everybody is going to fall down and worship this statue, this idol. Okay? So here they're confronted with that. And the penalty of not doing what they're told to do is they're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace. Okay? A little bit later on, after the Persians come in and conquer the Babylonian Empire, they're in rule now. And there are some satraps, those are government officials, that were very envious of Daniel. They were jealous of Daniel because of the position and the favor that he had with the king. Okay? And so they talked the king into writing an edict that says basically that those Israelite people could not pray to their God. Okay? And they were in the habit of doing that three times a day, okay, on different occasions. Right? And so Daniel went right ahead and did what he was supposed to do, and what was the result of it? He got thrown into the lion's den, okay? So those satraps kind of set up a trap for Daniel to cause this to happen. Now here's the point we want to make. If we think about ourselves, and if we were in the position that those three men in Daniel were in, those four men actually, we were in government control, we're being ordered to do certain things, or you're going to pay for it with your life, okay, how would we respond to that? What would we do? Probably start to rationalize. It's not going to hurt for me to eat one little pork chop. You know, that's okay. I can eat this pork chop. God's not going to hold me accountable for that when he knows my life is in danger. Okay? You know, what's it going to hurt if I miss one or two prayers, you know, as my ritual is? It's not going to hurt a thing, you know, and that way my life will be spared. You see the point I'm getting at here? As we begin to think in ways to justify not doing what we've been told to do. All right? Now, we look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, and they paid the ultimate price for not doing what they were commanded to do. Okay? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into a fiery furnace. What was their response to that when they were told that they were going to be thrown in there? We're still not going to do it. Okay. So they were convinced that they were going to do the right thing, even if it cost them their lives. And I'm telling you, they did not know when they went into the fiery furnace that they would be rescued. They said, possibility, and if God chooses to do so, he'll do it. And he did. Okay. So that's a good thing. And Daniel, okay, he said, you keep praying, you're going to be thrown in the lion's den. And he says, sorry, that's what we do. And so he got thrown in the lion's den. Of course, he was rescued also. Now, point I'm making is if we're caught in that situation, don't think that God's going to come down and give you a miraculous rescue. Doesn't mean that you won't be rescued. It doesn't mean that something's not going to happen. But the point is, you need to determine in your mind whether you're going to obey the commandments of God or maybe try to justify making some concessions. Okay? And that's the point that we want to talk about today when we talk about the idea of obedience. Okay? How important is obedience? What does God allow and what does God not allow as far as my obedience is concerned? Okay? That's something for us to think about. All right. Let's think a little bit about Jesus and his life. Now, Jesus was, he lived his whole life under the Old Testament law. Okay? The New Testament law doesn't come into effect until after he's gone back into heaven. Okay? So, he's keeping the same law that all those people were required to keep at that time. Go over to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 19. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 19. Someone have it? Okay, now hold your finger there. We're going to read another passage there in just a minute. Okay, so what did he tell us? Whosoever keeps what?
The least.
What commandments is he talking about? It doesn't matter whether it's Old Testament or New. It happened to be Old Testament this time, but any of the commandments of God, whoever keeps even the least of them. Okay? Now, what does he mean? Is there a least and a greater as far as commandments are concerned? Yeah. Not really, but sometimes there's some things that are easy to keep and others that are maybe harder to keep.
Okay.
Yeah, So that's something we need to think about. And he says, if you keep them, you're good. If you don't, you're bad. And he says, even the least little one. Okay, now drop down to verse 21 and read that one for me. That verse 20, 21? What did I say, 20? 21. No, 21 is what I wrote down. That's not the right one, though. I'm having a habit of doing that. I'm rushing and writing things down. I thought I'm writing them down right, but okay.
Verse 20,
all right, what does it say?
For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes.
No, that's not the one either, but that's okay. It's just a re-emphasis of the one that we just read, really, though, is the fact that Jesus kept those commandments, okay, and he kept them all of his life. He didn't go back on any of those things. All right, now drop down to Matthew chapter 12 and verse 50. Matthew 12, verse 50. Okay. So what's he basically saying? Those who are part of my family are the ones who do the will. Okay? Now what does that imply? That if you don't do his will, then you're not part of his family. Okay? Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do the things I do? Well, you can't do that. You can call him all you want to, but if you're not, then you're not part of the family of God. John chapter 15 and verse 10. Okay. Are these options? I mean, can we choose whether we want to do these things? No, you can't. Okay. These are commands from God. You have to do what God tells you to do. And it's bad when we have to look at it that way. You know, do I have to do that? Do I have to do that? That's the wrong attitude. Okay. God knows what's good for us. God knows what He wants us to do. And He's telling us how to live in order to be successful. Okay. In order to be pleasing to Him. And so these are the things that we do. And if we disobey those things, we're disobeying God's commandments. Okay, one more. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8 and 9. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8 and 9. Okay, he learned obedience. How did he learn obedience? By suffering. Basically by suffering the death on the cross, okay? He was obedient to God even to that point, okay? And so we need to keep that in mind and understand that he is our example. He's the one that we're supposed to pattern our lives after. And if he chose to live this way, then we should live this way also, because that's the only way that we're going to be acceptable to God. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the relationship between faith and obedience. Okay, faith and obedience. Go over to Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8 and 9. And we're just going to re-emphasize a point here, and that is the fact that salvation is by grace. Okay, salvation is by grace. We're not going to deny that. We would be lying if we did deny that. But we need to understand the difference, the importance of faith and obedience. Verse 8 says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourself, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast." All right, now tell me what that verse just said. How are we saved? We're saved by grace. Grace is a gift from God. Okay? We think about grace, you know. What does grace mean to you? What are we talking about? We're talking about, that's such a gracious person. What do we mean by that?
Kind, forgiving.
They're kind, they're loving, they're forgiving. Okay? And that's what we're talking about here. So grace is a gift from God. Grace, by His grace, by His gift, we have been saved. But then what does it say? Through faith. All right, now what is faith? What is faith? That's my believing what God tells me to do, my trusting what God tells me to do, my having a hope in what God tells me to do. Okay? So the grace is offered to us, but in order to avail myself of it, I have to have the faith that what He tells me is true. Okay? That's kind of like people use examples sometimes of the little boy hanging from the limb on the tree, and he's saying, "Help me, Daddy, help me." And he's, Daddy's standing there, and he doesn't have a ladder, so he said, "Well, turn loose and I'll grab you, you know." Well, no, I'll fall. "No, I'll get you, just turn loose, you know." Well, eventually, that little boy's going to have faith that his dad will catch him and turn loose so that he can. That's maybe a poor idea, but it kind of gets you in the right idea of what we're talking about when we talk about faith. Eventually, we have to turn loose what we're holding on to and put our faith in God, okay, that he will do and that he is what he says. Okay? So the grace is offered, but it takes the faith in order to avail ourselves of mercy and that grace that he shows to us. Now, there is a doctrine that's been taught for years and years about predestination. This was a Calvinistic doctrine that basically says you're either saved or you're lost, and you have no choice in the matter. Okay? When and those that are saved, the doctrine that they teach is that irresistible grace, I think is how they word it. In other words, you don't have any choice. You get it whether you want it or not. Okay? Well, there's a problem with that. Okay? There's a big problem with that. Because when we look at the cross of Jesus, what does that cross do for us? What's the idea of the cross? It's a sacrifice, but what does it... It kind of calls out to us, right? Why do we talk about the cross and teach about the cross if everyone can't avail themselves of what happened on the cross? That cross is calling out to the whole world, okay? Calling out to the whole world that this is my sacrifice for the sins of the world, okay? And what it's basically saying is, you know, if you will obey, okay, then you can avail yourselves of that sacrifice that I made, okay? So that kind of extinguishes this idea of irresistible grace. What it involves is it involves a decision on mankind's part, you know, that he will accept the grace of God, okay? That takes faith, and that takes obedience, okay? So you can't have faith without obedience. You can't have obedience without the faith, okay? That's one of those steps we talk about when we like to list a little stairway, you know, to salvation. Hear, believe, faith, confession, you know, those kind of things. Well, the faith is there. You have to have faith. And then you have to obey what God tells you to do. And we try to emphasize that very greatly out when we go out to the jail and the prison out there. For those people that want to be baptized, we'll always talk to them first, and we say, now listen, we want to explain to you what we're doing here. You know, it may not be what you're here for, but let us explain what we're doing, okay, so that you can accept that. And we talk about the idea of faith and obedience, okay? Those things are necessary. If you don't have those things, you're just going to get wet, okay? So that's the relationship between the idea of faith and obedience, and you have to have both of those. Okay? Because remember what we read in the beginning. He says, why do you call me Lord, Lord? You know, that could be the faith part, but then you don't do what I tell you to do. Well, you might believe it, but you don't really believe it. You're not following through, so you're not putting your trust in God where it ought to be. That makes sense to everybody? Getting a little frog in my throat here. Excuse me. Didn't mean to do that. Our faith has to be turned into deeds. Okay? Now we have some of our denominational brethren will tell us, you know, your deeds can't save you. You can't earn your salvation. Well, they're absolutely right. Okay? They're absolutely right. Go over to John chapter 2 and let's see what John has to say about these things. John chapter 2. Let's start with verse 14. John chapter 2, verse 14. John 2? I'm sorry, John. It's not John, I'm sorry. Hold on. James. James chapter 2. I abbreviated there, so I knew it wasn't in John to start out with. James chapter 2. Verse 14. Yeah, try it again there, Tommy.
What does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he has faith and has not works, can faith save him?
Okay, that's the one. What did it say? We said faith was necessary, didn't we? Okay, but what else is necessary? Works, deeds, okay, all right. Drop down to verse 18 and look what he says.
Yea, a man may say, though
Okay. You see, you can't have faith without works. All right. So when the world says you can't earn your salvation by works, they're absolutely right. But works are the result of our faith. Okay? James said there, you know, show me your faith without your works. Well, you can't. You know, all you can do is say it with your mouth. I have faith, but there's no way to know. And he says the way to know if you have faith is by the things that you do. Okay? And that's our obedience to what God tells us to do. Okay? We're told to be loving, caring people. We're told to minister those around us. We're told to encourage and admonish one another. Those are the deeds that we do, all those and a whole big list of things that we do one another. We do those for the benefit of not only those in the world, but also for our family, our church family. Okay?
When Dr. Jones said, I don't do works to get saved, I do works because I am.
That's exactly right. And that's what it's all about. Now read verse 26 there also. Yes.
Verse 26.
Yes.
3:26.
Right. No, 2:26.
All right. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also.
That's pretty plain, isn't it? Pretty plain. Okay. So we're not doing our works, our obedience, in order to be saved. Why are we doing them? Because we are saved. Okay, that's a natural response. Okay, so that's the relationship between faith and obedience. Okay, you can't have one without the other. They go together. Over in Hebrews chapter 11, there's a great list of what we call heroes of the faith there. And it starts out with Abraham. We like to use Abraham. He's kind of the father that we use for our idea of faith. It says there that he was told to leave his home in Ur of the Chaldees, okay, and didn't know where he was going. God said, I'll show you. And he got up and left. Okay? That was faith. Okay? Didn't question, didn't ask for answers, just got up and left because God told him to do it. He was also told a bit later on to take your son Isaac. Now think about this. You know, it doesn't dawn on us sometime to think about this. But how old was Abraham when Isaac was born? 100 years old. Never had any children. God said, I'm going to give you a son. Okay. Well, great, you know. He'd already told him that through his seed, all the nations of the earth were going to be blessed. Well, he didn't have a seed. Okay. God finally gave him a seed. When Isaac was about, I think like 15 or 16 years old, I don't know exactly how old he was, God said, take him out there and sacrifice him. Talk about kick the ladder out from under you. Okay. Now think about this. Abraham's thinking, well, that don't make sense if I kill him. What happens to the seed line? You know, it's not going to happen, you know. But you know what Abraham's idea was? The scripture tells us that Abraham's thought process was that if I sacrifice him, God's going to raise him back up. See, that's his faith. That's his faith. Would you be willing to do that? I hope I'm never tested to that extent, okay. But see, that's what we're talking about when we talk about obedience. Obedience is faith in action. Is that a good definition? Doesn't help it understand? Obedience is faith in action. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do the things I tell you to do? In other words, if you have faith, show me your faith by your actions. Okay? So that's kind of what we're talking about there. No, don't know. There's sometimes when it's just such a great comfort to just be able to turn it all over to God. And that's not easy to do. You know, when we turn loose of something, we feel helpless, don't we? I'm telling you. And so we say, well, just trust in God. Yeah, right. You know, I'm going to do that. And then we keep still hanging on and hanging on. And God expects us to do everything that we can, but, you know, for ourselves. But eventually there's going to come a time when we just have to let God do it for us. Okay, so that's the idea. All right, now, let's talk about a couple of minutes here we got left here. Let's talk about the type of obedience that God wants. Okay, and the first thing I want to talk about here is the idea of complete obedience. Okay, now, let me use this example. We got a guy that wants to build a house, and he's got a set of blueprints, and he takes them to a builder, and he says, "This is what I want. Can you build this?" And he said, "Yes, I can build this." Okay, all right. Now, Andy, I'm gonna pick on you here. You're a builder, okay? Now, what would do if you took this set of blueprints and you looked at them and it says, "I want a bedroom over here in this corner of the house," and you look at that and say, "That's a good idea. That's a good place for it. You know, the sun can shine right here, and it's a nice place. So we're good with that, okay?" And then it says, "I want to put the garage over here," and you look at those plans and you say, "Well, that's smart. I mean, the road's over there, and they got direct access, and they can park their cars in the garage. That's good, okay?" And then it says, "I want to put my den over here," and you go, "Oh no, that's not a good idea. You don't want that den down there next to the garage where there's all that noise and everything, and you don't want it down here by the bedroom and everything. Let's put it in the front of the house, you know." And so you say, "That's what I'm going to do." Okay? Now, how faithful is Andy in obeying the blueprints?
Two-thirds.
Huh?
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds obedient? Okay. Would you be surprised if I said zero? He's zero obedient, okay? And the reason why is because he only did what the plans call for when it agreed with what he wanted to do. That make sense? In other words, I'm going to do what God tells me to do as long as I agree with what he says. But if I don't agree, okay, then I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. So basically, you weren't obedient in anything. You were only obedient in doing what you wanted to do. Okay, does that sound shocking? Okay, that's true. Let's go back to our example of King Saul. What did King Saul do? Was he obedient? He was 95% obedient, if you want to look at it that way, because he killed everybody but Amalek. Okay, Agag. Yeah, he was killing all the Amalekites. He didn't kill Agag. Brought him back for sacrifice. So, you know, in his mind, he was more successful than not, but in God's mind, you only did what you wanted to do. All right? They saw those poor old sickly animals, and they killed them all. We'll get rid of them. They're no good. That's rubbish. That's trash. Okay? But look at these fat ones here. You know, these pretty ones here. Let's take those back with us. Okay? Exactly right. So we got to think about that. You know, am I doing what God wants me to do, or am I doing what I want to do? Am I going to obey because I agree with God, or am I going to obey because God said it? Driving down the streets out here, and the speed limit says 50 miles an hour, and I'm driving 60. You know, my rationale is that was just a suggestion. You know, 50 is just a suggestion. Well, no, it's not. That's the law. Okay, that's the law. Okay? And so, we, you know, if we interpret that over to biblical teaching is, you know, we are not responsible for determining what God's commandments are. He's given them to us for our own good and because he knows what is best. Okay. And I don't pick and choose what I want to obey and say, well, on the judgment day, well, I was 75% successful, God. Yeah. You know, now, what's he going to say? He said, no, you were zero successful because you only did what you wanted to do. Okay, so he expects complete obedience, all right? He also expects for us to be cheerful in our obedience. And that's where it comes in kind of hard sometimes, doesn't it? You know, not only to do what he says to do, but be cheerful about it. This kind of comes into play when we think about our idea of giving, okay? What kind of givers are we told to be? Cheerful givers, okay? Cheerful givers. That's what we want to be. All right. And here's the problem with that, is that many times we give, you know, because we're told to give, but boy, we, you know, to the last minute, you know. Does God accept that? Does he accept that gift? Well, it's going into the collection plate. It's going to go in there anyway, one way or another. But he's not going to be too pleased with us, okay, because he wants us to have a joyous experience in giving and being a part of the work of God. Read for me 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 7. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7. We're just about out of time here.
So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver.
Okay, and what you read that word purpose, what does that mean?
Decide.
Yeah, you've done a little planning. You thought this out ahead of time. This is what I'm going to give to God. Okay, this is what I'm going to give back to the one that gave me all this stuff. So we don't wait till the last minute, you know, and reach in our pocket and pull out our change and throw it in. We give some thought to this, and we do it cheerfully, okay? But that's not just on the idea of giving. That's from all of God's commands, okay? We do all these things. All right. The third thing, we don't have time to talk about this, is that we want to be constant in our obedience to God, not just sometimes, okay, all the time. Okay, we're going to have to quit. We're out of time. Comments, questions? Okay, appreciate everybody's attention.